From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, pink salmon are doing the unexpected in some parts of the state, either popping up at unpredicted rates or in surprising places. Homer residents recently found pinks passing through the middle of town in a saltwater marsh not known for salmon returns. And also, Alaskans with an eye on the state's salmon habitats continue the fight to protect fish from development. That and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs.
Pink salmon are showing up in odd places around the Homer area. Fish can be seen swimming through Beluga Slough in the middle of town, a saltwater marsh with no historical salmon returns. Dead pinks litter the marsh's muddy banks at low tide, and several fish are still swimming around. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has also received reports of pinks and other systems around the Kenai Peninsula that typically don't support salmon. KBBI's Aaron Bolton has more.
Fish and Game Area Management Biologist Glenn Hollowell says pink salmon are returning to small water systems around Homer and along the outer coast of the Kenai Peninsula in large numbers. Streams and creeks that typically support small populations are seeing higher numbers. And historically uninhabitable systems are also seeing returns.
We're seeing very large numbers of fish in a variety of places around Kachemak Bay. Some of the creeks at the back of Little Tutka Bay have really unusual numbers of pink salmon associated with them, as does Diamond Creek. Seldovia Slough also has a lot of pink salmon in it right now.
Pinks are a two-year fish, and Hollowell thinks the large numbers of pinks showing up in odd places is merely a reflection of 2015's record-breaking return. Several reports came in that year of fish straying from overcrowded water systems into new territory, and the season was followed by an unusually warm winter.
Some of those systems actually had a lot of fish in them, which may have actually depressed the returns slightly, but a lot of the smaller systems had just the right number. And if you combine that with the warm winter, which was pretty wet, those little systems were perfect incubators for pink salmon, and that's what we're seeing right now.
He says the mild winter likely allowed eggs in Beluga Slough to hatch the following spring, creating a small run in the marsh this year. People can be seen gathering near the slough to take a look for themselves. Emily Springer, who studies the fishing industry and is married to a commercial fisherman, grew up around Homer. She said she's never seen anything like it. Springer took her kids and a friend's family to Diamond Creek, a few miles outside of town, just to watch the fish.
Yeah, I just thought it was really interesting, and I thought she's a fisherman, and she might think it was interesting, too, to bring her own kids down there and go check it out and just see how far up the creek these salmon had gotten. They got all the way up to where the waterfall is.
For those asking if we'll see another return in 2019 to Beluga Slough and other systems, Hollowell said that depends on the weather this winter.
We might continue to see pink salmon in Beluga Slough, you know, if we see wet, warm winters. However, if we get some bitterly cold winters, like is more the norm for this area, some of those frying eggs might have a really, really tough time. And we might see this return drop back to historical levels where it's essentially, you know, undetectable.
There were no official counts of how many fish made it up the slough, but Hollowell estimates that about 2,000 pinks may have spawned there. Fish and Game is taking samples of ear bones to find out if the pinks may be hatchery fish, but Hollowell doesn't expect that to be the case. He says a 2015 return around Kachemak Bay was overwhelmingly comprised of wild fish. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Katoy Bay Hatchery in the Kodiak area thought 10 million pink salmon would return this summer, but only around 2 million showed up. Even though its estimates were off, the hatchery was able to meet 95% of its cost recovery fishing goal. Tina Fairbanks is the executive director of the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association, which is the organization that runs the hatchery. She says the bulk of the fish were gathered in 11 days, which means they caught a lot of salmon in a short period of time, over 900,000 pounds on their biggest day. Fairbanks says after a summer filled with so many ups and downs, KRAA was excited to finish the season by catching so many pinks.
That ensures next year's operations and gives us a little bit of a cushion for years when perhaps we do fall short or we make a decision to forego cost recovery or not cost recover all of our operating.
Fairbanks says KRAA ended up with over 5 million pounds of salmon.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans.
Silver salmon are spawning all across Kodiak. It looks like a pretty normal year for the cohos, except they're coming in especially big and strong. KMXC's Mitch Borden has more.
Silver salmon are currently filling Kodiak's waters, but according to James Jackson, a commercial salmon area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the run didn't begin on time.
They showed up a little later, but when they came in, they sure came in hot and heavy.
Weirs in Upper Station and Karluk started seeing silvers around late August. So far, commercial fishermen have caught about 328,000 cohos, which is pretty average. One thing that isn't typical, though, is the size of the fish.
So the last 5 years, the average weight is about, in the commercial fisheries, a little under 7 pounds. And the current average weight that we have for silvers right now is almost 7.5 pounds.
Jackson says that's a big increase when you take into account it's the average for hundreds of thousands of salmon. He says the reason silvers are probably bigger this year is because there's a lot of food for them around Kodiak. During surveys, Jackson says he's seen a lot of fish silvers like to eat.
They're probably just out there feeding before they're coming in to spawn, and they're just getting really big.
Even though there's plenty of coho, Jackson doesn't know how much longer commercial fishermen will be catching them. The length of the region's silver salmon commercial fishery depends on things like the weather and market factors.
We'll obviously have some more commercial openings for silvers, but whether fishermen want to keep going after them or it's worthwhile for them to keep going after them is a different story.
Kodiak silvers spawn later in the season compared to other runs around the state, so seafood processors don't need them as much. Jackson says fishermen try to do everything they can with the salmon available, but a lot of silvers aren't harvested. For KMXT, I'm Mitch Borden.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family.
Alaska's Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott has denied a proposed ballot initiative designed to offer greater protections for salmon habitat from mining or other development. The group Stand for Salmon proposed an initiative requiring water quality standards in anadromous fish streams and giving the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game greater authority to deny a development project if it would harm or alter salmon streams. Supporters of the measure were hoping to gather signatures and get the proposal on a statewide ballot. One of the initiative's sponsors, Mike Wood of the Susitna River Coalition and Sioux Salmon Company, reacted with disappointment over the state's decision.
Since statehood, we had a very strong fish habitat permitting system. It's been whittled away from administration to administration over the years in favor of industry and development. And we're just trying to restore it back to where it was originally intended, to have some teeth and not to stop projects, but to be sure to give everybody on both sides assurance that if development happens, it will happen in a way that will not impact our fish resource.
Malott's decision can still be appealed. Wood says the group may look to challenge the state's decision in court. The proposed law could have made it more difficult to develop proposed projects like the Pebble Mine in the headquarters of Bristol Bay or a dam on the Susitna River. Assistant Attorney General Elizabeth Bacalar recommended against certifying the initiative. In an opinion, she wrote the proposed bill would deprive the legislature of its exclusive discretion to allocate state assets among competing needs. She wrote, quote, "The initiative contains restrictions and directives that would require the commissioner to reject permits for resource development or public projects in favor of fish habitat," unquote. She noted this version of the proposed law was similar to one already withdrawn by the bill sponsors because of constitutional concerns cited by the state. Could a cross-boundary mining battle lead to a trade war with Canada? A Southeast Alaska tribal organization is using that possibility to push federal officials into providing stronger protections for regional fisheries. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
A coalition of 16 Southeast tribal governments has filed paperwork that could lead to trade sanctions against British Columbia, which borders the region. Frederick Olson Jr. is chairman of the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission. He says about half of the region's tribal governments have signed a petition to the Federal Department of the Interior.
The goal is to get federal involvement in our transboundary mining issue, and so we are getting some more of our member tribes to sign on.
What's called a Pelley petition is allowed under a provision of the Federal Fishermen's Protective Act. Guy Archibald is staff scientist for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, which also opposes transboundary mining.
If another country is found to be violating the tenets of the Fishermen's Act, the other country can institute trade sanctions against that country.
A number of advocacy groups and local governments are concerned about mines on or near British Columbia rivers that flow through Southeast. They say silt, minerals, and acidic water from the mines will damage fish stocks on both sides of the border. British Columbia's mineral extraction industry says it develops and operates its mines safely with limited environmental impacts. Archibald says trade sanctions are not the petition's real goal. Instead, the groups want federal officials to put their concerns before the International Joint Commission. That panel moderates disputes involving U.S.-Canada boundary waters.
Now, nobody really wants to start a trade war with British Columbia. Basically, what they're saying is that if neither country wants to refer this matter to the International Joint Commission, we as people of this side have other options, and that maybe an International Joint Commission would be a less onerous of the two options.
Interior Department officials did not immediately respond to inquiries about the petition. Archibald says they've told petitioners they're looking into it, but that's all. Earlier efforts trying to get the State Department to involve the Joint Commission were unsuccessful. The Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission is the new name for the United Tribal Transboundary Mining Work Group. Olson, the chairman and a Kasan resident, says the new name addresses the wider scope of the group's work.
Transboundary issues are far beyond mining alone. There's oil tankers, there's radioactive debris, there's fish farms breaking apart, there's cruise ships dumping their bad water.
The organization is also reaching out to Alaska Native groups facing similar issues. Olson says that includes the United Tribes of Bristol Bay.
We completely back them up in their fight against the pebble mine and to protect Bristol Bay and all the watersheds up there.
He says hiring a coordinator will help develop and formalize such relationships. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K through 12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KBBI's Aaron Bolton in Homer, KMXT's Mitch Borden in Kodiak, Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and KFSK's Joe Vicnicki in Petersburg. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.